freedom is like a new sport. In the beginning, the sheer newness of it is exciting enough to keep things interesting at all times. Once you have learned the basics, though, it becomes clear that to be even a half-decent player requires some serious practice. Don't fret. The greatest rewards are to come, and you're 10 feet from the finish line. Frustrations and doubts. You're not alone. People say that what we are seeking is a meaning for life. I don't think this is what we're really seeking. I think what we're seeking is an experience of being alive. Joseph Campbell, The Power of Myth. Once you eliminate the 9-to-5 and the rubber hits the road, it's not all roses and white sand bliss, though much of it can be. Without the distraction of deadlines and co-workers, the big questions, such as what does it all mean, become harder to fend off for a later time. In a sea of infinite options, decisions also become harder. What the hell should I do with my life? It's like senior year in college all over again. Like all innovators ahead of the curve, you will have frightening moments of doubt. Once past the kid in a candy store phase, the comparative impulse will creep in. The rest of the world will continue with its 9-to-5 grind, and you'll begin to question your decision to step off the treadmill. Common doubts and self-flagellation include the following. 1. Am I really doing this to be more free and lead a better life, or am I just lazy? 2. Did I quit the rat race because it's bad, or just because I couldn't hack it? Did I just cop out? 3. Is this as good as it gets? Perhaps I was better off when I was following orders and ignorant of the possibilities. It was easier, at least. 4. Am I really successful, or just kidding myself? 5. Have I lowered my standards to make myself a winner? Are my friends, who are now making twice as much as 3 years ago, really on the right track? 6. Why am I not happy? I can do anything and I'm still not happy. Do I even deserve it? Most of this can be overcome as soon as we recognize it for what it is. Outdated comparisons using the more is better and money as success mindsets that got us into trouble to begin with. Even so, there is a more profound observation to be made. These doubts invade the mind when nothing else fills it. Think of a time when you felt 100% alive and undistracted, in the zone. Chances are that it was when you were completely focused in the moment on something external, someone or something else. Sports and sex are two great examples. Lacking an external focus, the mind turns inward on itself and creates problems to solve, even if the problems are undefined or unimportant. If you find a focus, an ambitious goal that seems impossible and forces you to grow, these doubts disappear. Abraham Maslow, the American psychologist famous for proposing Maslow's hierarchy of needs, would term this goal a peak experience. In the process of searching for a new focus, it is almost inevitable that the big questions will creep in. There is pressure from pseudo-philosophers everywhere to cast aside the impertinent and answer the eternal. Two popular examples are, what is the meaning of life, and what is the point of it all? There are many more, ranging from the introspective to the ontological, but I have one answer for almost all of them. I don't answer them at all. I'm no nihilist. In fact, I've spent more than a decade investigating the mind and concept of meaning, a quest that has taken me from the neuroscience laboratories of top universities to the halls of religious institutions worldwide. The conclusion, after it all, is surprising. I am 100% convinced that most big questions we feel compelled to face, handed down through centuries of overthinking and mistranslation, use terms so undefined as to make attempting to answer them a complete waste of time. There is a place for cones and rhetorical meditative questions, but these tools are optional and outside the scope of this audiobook. Most questions without answers are just poorly worded. This isn't depressing. It's liberating. Consider the question of questions. What is the meaning of life? If pressed, I have but one response. It is the characteristic state or condition of a living organism. But that's just a definition, the questioner will retort. That's not what I mean at all. What do you mean, then? Until the question is clear, each term in it defined, there is no point in answering it. The meaning of life question is unanswerable without further elaboration. Before spending time on a stress-inducing question, big or otherwise, ensure that the answer is yes to the following two questions. 1. Have I decided on a single meaning for each term in this question? 2. Can the answer to this question be acted upon to improve things? What is the meaning of life fails the first and thus the second. Questions about things beyond your sphere of influence, like, what if the train is late tomorrow, fail the second and should thus be ignored. These are not worthwhile questions. If you can't define it or act upon it, forget it. If you take just this point from this audiobook, it will put you in the top 1% of performers in the world and keep most philosophical distress out of your life. Sharpening your logical and practical mental toolbox is not being an atheist or unspiritual. It's not being crass, and it's not being superficial. It's being smart and putting your effort where it can make the biggest difference for yourself and others. The point of it all. Drum roll, please. What man actually needs is not a tensionless state, but rather the striving and struggling for a worthwhile goal, a freely chosen task. Viktor E. Frankl, Holocaust survivor, author of Man's Search for Meaning. I believe that life exists to be enjoyed, and that the most important thing is to feel good about yourself. Each person will have his or her own vehicles for both, and those vehicles will change over time. For some, the answer will be working with orphans, and for others, it will be composing music. I have a personal answer to both. To love, be loved, and never stop learning. But I don't expect that to be universal. Some criticize a focus on self-love and enjoyment as selfish or hedonistic, but it's neither. Enjoying life and helping others, or feeling good about yourself and increasing the greater good, are no more mutually exclusive than being agnostic and leading a moral life. One does not preclude the other. Let's assume we agree on this. It still leaves the question, what can I do with my time to enjoy life and feel good about myself? I can't offer a single answer that will fit all people, but based on the dozens of fulfilled NR I've interviewed, there are two components that are fundamental: continual learning and service. Learning unlimited, sharpening the saw. Americans who travel abroad for the first time are often shocked to discover that, despite all the progress that has been made in the last 30 years, many foreign people still speak in foreign languages. Dave Barry. To live is to learn. I see no other option. This is why I felt compelled to quit or be fired from jobs within the first 6 months or so. The learning curve flattens out and I get bored. Though you can upgrade your brain domestically, traveling and relocating provides unique conditions that make progress much faster. The different surroundings act as a counterpoint and mirror for your own prejudices, making weaknesses that much easier to fix. I rarely travel somewhere without deciding first how I'll obsess on a specific skill. Here are a few examples. Connemara, Ireland. Gaelic Irish, Irish flute, and hurling, the fastest field sport in the world. Imagine a mix of lacrosse and rugby, played with axe handles. Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Brazilian Portuguese and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. Berlin, Germany. German and locking, a form of upright breakdancing. I tend to focus on language acquisition and one kinesthetic skill, sometimes finding the latter after landing overseas. The most successful serial vagabonds tend to blend the mental and the physical. Notice that I often transport a skill I practice domestically, martial arts, to other countries where they are also practiced. Instant social life and camaraderie. It need not be a competitive sport. It could be hiking, chess, or almost anything that keeps your nose out of a textbook and you out of your apartment. Sports just happen to be excellent for avoiding foreign language stage fright and developing lasting friendships while still sounding like Tarzan. Language learning deserves special mention. It is, bar none, the best thing you can do to hone clear thinking. Quite aside from the fact that it is impossible to understand a culture without understanding its language, acquiring a new language makes you aware of your own language, your own thoughts. The benefits of becoming fluent in a foreign tongue are as underestimated as the difficulty is overestimated. Thousands of theoretical linguists will disagree, but I know from research and personal experimentation with more than a dozen languages that, one, adults can learn languages much faster than children when constant 9-to-5 work is removed, and that, two, it is possible to become conversationally fluent in any language in 6 months or less. At 4 hours per day, 6 months can be whittled down to less than 3 months. It is beyond the scope of this audiobook to explain applied linguistics and the 80-20 of language learning, but resources and complete how-to guides can be found under Language at 4hourblog.com. I learned 6 languages after failing Spanish in high school, and you can do the same with the right tools. Gain a language and you gain a second lens through which to question and understand the world. Cursing at people when you go home is fun, too. Don't miss the chance to double your life experience. Service for the right reasons. To save the whales or kill them and feed the children. Morality is simply the attitude we adopt toward people we personally dislike. Oscar Wilde. One would expect me to mention service in this chapter, and here it is. Like all before it, the twist is a bit different. Service, to me, is simple. Doing something that improves life besides your own. This is not the same as philanthropy. Philanthropy is the altruistic concern for the well-being of mankind, human life. Human life has long been focused on the exclusion of the environment and the rest of the food chain. Hence, our current race to imminent extinction. Serves us right. The world does not exist solely for the betterment and multiplication of mankind. Before I start chaining myself to trees and saving the dart frogs, though, I should take my own advice. Do not become a cause snob. How can you help starving children in Africa when there are starving children in Los Angeles? How can you save the whales when homeless people are freezing to death? How does doing volunteer research on coral destruction help those people who need help now? Children, please. Everything out there needs help, so don't get baited into my cause can beat up your cause arguments with no right answer. There are no qualitative or quantitative comparisons that make sense. The truth is this. Those thousands of lives you save could contribute to a famine that kills millions, or that one bush in Bolivia that you protect could hold the cure for cancer. The downstream effects are unknown. Do your best and hope for the best. If you're improving the world, however you define that, consider your job well done. Service isn't limited to saving lives or the environment either. It can also improve life. If you are a musician and put a smile on the faces of thousands or millions, I view that as service. If you are a mentor and change the life of one child for the better, the world has been improved. Improving the quality of life in the world is in no fashion inferior to adding more lives. Service is an attitude. Find the cause or vehicle that interests you most and make no apologies. Q&A. Questions and Actions. Adults are always asking kids what they want to be when they grow up because they are looking for ideas. Paula Poundstone. The miracle is not to walk on water. The miracle is to walk on the green earth, dwelling deeply in the present moment and feeling truly alive. Thich Nhat Hanh. But I can't just travel, learn languages, or fight for one cause for the rest of my life. Of course you can't. That's not my suggestion at all. These are just good life hubs, starting points that lead to opportunities and experiences that otherwise wouldn't be found. There is no right answer to the question, what should I do with my life? Forget should altogether. The next step, and that's all it is pursuing something. It matters little what, that seems fun or rewarding. Don't be in a rush to jump into a full-time, long-term commitment. Take time to find something that calls to you, not just the first acceptable form of surrogate work. That calling will, in turn, lead you to something else. Here is a good sequence for getting started that dozens of NR have used with success. 1. Revisit ground zero. Do nothing. Before we can escape the goblins of the mind, we need to face them. Principal among them is speed addiction. It is hard to recalibrate your internal clock without taking a break from constant overstimulation. Travel and the impulse to see a million things can exacerbate this. Slowing down doesn't mean accomplishing less. It means cutting out counterproductive distractions and the perception of being rushed. Consider attending a short silence retreat of 3 to 7 days, during which all media and speaking is prohibited. Learn to turn down the static of the mind so you can appreciate more before doing more. The Art of Living Foundation, Course 2, International, artofliving.org. Spirit Rock Meditation Center in California, spiritrock.org. Kripalu Center for Yoga and Health in Massachusetts, kripalu.org. Sky Lake Lodge in New York, sky-lake.org. 2. Make an anonymous donation to the service organization of your choice. This helps to get the juices flowing and disassociate feeling good about service with getting credit for it. It feels even better when it's pure. Here are some good sites to get started. Charity Navigator, charitynavigator.org. This independent service ranks more than 5,000 charities using criteria you select. Create a personalized page of favorites and compare them side by side, all free of charge. First Giving, firstgiving.com. Firstgiving.com allows you to create an online fundraising page. Donations can be made through your personal URL. I have used First Giving in coordination with a nonprofit called Room to Read to build schools in both Nepal and Vietnam, with more countries pending. FirstGiving.com/Tim Ferriss and FirstGiving.com/Tim Ferriss 2. If you specifically want to help animals, for example, you can click on a related link and access websites for hundreds of different animal charities, and then decide which one you want to donate to. The UK version of the website is justgiving.com. Network for Good, networkforgood.org. Visitors to this website will find links to charities in need of donations, as well as opportunities to do volunteer work. They can also set up an automated credit card donation online. 3. Take a learning mini-retirement in combination with local volunteering. Take a mini-retirement, 6 months or more if possible, to focus on learning and serving. The longer duration will permit a language focus, which in turn enables more meaningful interaction and contribution through volunteering. For the duration of this trip, note self-criticisms and negative self-talk in a journal. Whenever upset or anxious, ask why at least 3 times and put the answers down on paper. Describing these doubts in writing reduces their impact twofold. First, it's often the ambiguous nature of self-doubt that hurts most. Defining and exploring it in writing, just as with forcing colleagues to email, demands clarity of thought, after which most concerns are found to be baseless. Second, recording these concerns seems to somehow remove them from your head. But where to go and what to do? There is no one right answer to either. Use the following questions and resources to brainstorm. What makes you most angry about the state of the world? What are you most afraid of for the next generation, whether you have children or not? What makes you happiest in your life? How can you help others have the same? There is no need to limit yourself to one location. Remember Robin, who traveled through South America for a year with her husband and 7-year-old son? The three of them spent 1 to 2 months doing volunteer work in each location, including building wheelchairs in Banos, Ecuador, rehabilitating exotic animals in the Bolivian rainforest, and shepherding leatherback sea turtles in Suriname. How about doing archaeological excavation in Jordan, or tsunami relief on the islands of Thailand? These are just two of the dozens of foreign relocation and volunteering case studies in each issue of Verge magazine, vergemagazine.com. Reader-tested resources include Hands-On Disaster Response, HODR.org, Project Hope, projecthope.org, Relief International, RI.org, International Relief Teams, IRteams.org, Airline Ambassadors International, airlineamb.org, Ambassadors for Children, ambassadorsforchildren.org, Relief Riders International, reliefridersinternational.com, Habitat for Humanity Global Village Program, habitat.org, Planeta, Global Listings for Practical Ecotourism, planeta.com. 4. Revisit and reset dreamlines. Following the mini-retirement, revisit the dreamlines set in definition and reset them as needed. The following questions will help. What are you good at? What could you be the best at? What makes you happy? What excites you? What makes you feel accomplished and good about yourself? What are you most proud of having accomplished in your life? Can you repeat this or further develop it? What do you enjoy sharing or experiencing with other people? 5. Based on the outcomes of steps 1 through 4, consider testing new part or full-time vocations. Full-time work isn't bad if it's what you'd rather be doing. This is where we distinguish work from a vocation. If you have created a muse or cut your hours down to next to nothing, consider testing a part-time or full-time vocation, a true calling or dream occupation. This is what I did with this audiobook. I can now tell people I'm a writer rather than giving them the 2-hour drug dealer explanation. What did you dream of being when you were a kid? Perhaps it's time to sign up for space camp or intern as an assistant to a marine biologist. Recapturing the excitement of childhood isn't impossible. In fact, it's required. There are no more chains or excuses to hold you back. 16. The Top 13 New Rich Mistakes. If you don't make mistakes, you're not working on hard enough problems, and that's a big mistake. Frank Wilczek, 2004 Nobel Prize winner in physics. Ho imparato che niente è impossibile, e anche che quasi niente è facile. I've learned that nothing is impossible and that almost nothing is easy. Articolo 31, Italian rap group, Un Orlo. Mistakes are the name of the game in lifestyle design. It requires fighting impulse after impulse from the old world of retirement-based life deferral. Here are the slip-ups you will make. Don't get frustrated. It's all part of the process. 1. Losing sight of dreams and falling into work for work's sake. W4W. Please re-listen to the introduction and next chapter of this audiobook whenever you feel yourself falling into this trap. Everyone does it, but many get stuck and never get out. 2. Micromanaging and emailing to fill time. Set the responsibilities, problem scenarios, and rules and limits of autonomous decision-making. Then stop for the sanity of everyone involved. 3. Handling problems your outsourcers or co-workers can handle. 4. Helping outsourcers or co-workers with the same problem more than once, or with non-crisis problems. Give them if-then rules for solving all but the largest problems. Give them the freedom to act without your input. Set the limits in writing, and then emphasize in writing that you will not respond to help with problems that are covered by these rules. In my particular case, all outsourcers have at their discretion the ability to fix any problem that will cost less than $400. At the end of each month, or quarter, depending on the outsourcer, I review how their decisions have affected profit and adjust the rules accordingly, often adding new rules based on their good decisions and creative solutions. 5. Chasing customers, particularly unqualified or international prospects, when you have sufficient cash flow to finance your non-financial pursuits. 6. Answering email that will not result in a sale or that can be answered by a FAQ or autoresponder. For a good example of an autoresponder that directs people to the appropriate information and outsourcers, email info@4hourworkweek.com. 7. Working where you live, sleep, or should relax. Separate your environments. Designate a single space for work and solely work, or you will never be able to escape it. To avoid the living room and coffee shop as offices, consider using a social co-working space on occasion. Coworking.pbwiki.com. 8. Not performing a thorough 80-20 analysis every 2 to 4 weeks for your business and personal life. 9. Striving for endless perfection rather than great or simply good enough, whether in your personal or professional life. Recognize that this is often just another W4W excuse. Most endeavors are like learning to speak a foreign language. To be correct 95% of the time requires 6 months of concentrated effort, whereas to be correct 98% of the time requires 20 to 30 years. Focus on great for a few things and good enough for the rest. Perfection is a good ideal and direction to have, but recognize it for what it is, an impossible destination. 10. Blowing minutiae and small problems out of proportion as an excuse to work. 11. Making non-time-sensitive issues urgent in order to justify work. How many times do I have to say it? Focus on life outside of your bank accounts, as scary as that void can be in the initial stages. If you cannot find meaning in your life, it is your responsibility as a human being to create it. Whether that is fulfilling dreams or finding work that gives you purpose and self-worth. Ideally, a combination of both. 12. Viewing one product, job, or project as the end-all and be-all of your existence. Life is too short to waste, but it is also too long to be a pessimist or nihilist. Whatever you're doing now is just a stepping stone to the next project or adventure. Any rut you get into is one you can get yourself out of. Doubts are no more than a signal for action of some type. When in doubt or overwhelmed, take a break and 80-20 both business and personal activities and relationships. 13. Ignoring the social rewards of life. Surround yourself with smiling, positive people who have absolutely nothing to do with work. Create your muses alone if you must, but do not live your life alone. Happiness shared in the form of friendships and love is happiness multiplied. The last chapter. An email you need to read. There is nothing the busy man is less busied with than living. There is nothing harder to learn. Seneca. For the past 33 years, I have looked in the mirror every morning and asked myself, if today were the last day of my life, would I want to do what I am about to do today? And whenever the answer has been no for too many days in a row, I know I need to change something. Almost everything. All external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure. These things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. Remembering that you are going to die is the best way I know to avoid the trap of thinking you have something to lose. Steve Jobs, college dropout and CEO of Apple Computer, Stanford University Commencement, 2005. If you're confused about life, you're not alone. There are almost 7 billion of us. This isn't a problem, of course, once you realize that life is neither a problem to be solved nor a game to be won. If you are too intent on making the pieces of a non-existent puzzle fit, you miss out on all the real fun. The heaviness of success chasing can be replaced with a serendipitous lightness when you recognize that the only rules and limits are those we set for ourselves. So be bold and don't worry about what people think. They don't do it that often anyway. 2 years ago, I was forwarded the following poem, originally written by child psychologist David L. Weatherford, by a close friend. He quit his own deferred life plan after reading it, and I hope you will do the same. Here it is. Slow Dance. Have you ever watched kids on a merry-go-round? Or listened to the rain slapping on the ground? Ever followed a butterfly's erratic flight? Or gazed at the sun into the fading night? You better slow down. Don't dance so fast. Time is short. The music won't last. Do you run through each day on the fly? When you ask, how are you? Do you hear the reply? When the day is done, do you lie in your bed with the next 100 chores running through your head? You'd better slow down. Don't dance so fast. Time is short. The music won't last. Ever told your child, we'll do it tomorrow, and in your haste not see his sorrow? Ever lost touch? Let a good friendship die, 'cause you never had time to call and say hi? You'd better slow down. Don't dance so fast. Time is short. The music won't last. When you run so fast to get somewhere, you miss half the fun of getting there. When you worry and hurry through your day, it is like an unopened gift thrown away. Life is not a race. Do take it slower. Hear the music before the song is over. Last but not least, the best of the blog. The Art of Letting Bad Things Happen, after 3 weeks off of the blog. Long time no see. I just landed back in California from a long overdue mini-retirement through London, Scotland, Sardinia, the Slovak Republic, Austria, Amsterdam, and Japan. Some unpleasant surprises awaited me when I checked in on the evil email inbox. Why? I let them happen. I always do. Here are just a few of the goodies that awaited me this time. One of our fulfillment companies had been shut down due to the CEO's death, causing a 20% plus loss in monthly orders and requiring an emergency shift of all web design and order processing. missed radio and magazine appearances, and upset would-be interviewers. More than a dozen lost joint venture partnership opportunities. It's not that I go out of my way to irritate people, not at all, but I recognize one critical fact. Oftentimes, in order to do the big things, you have to let the small bad things happen. This is a skill we want to cultivate. What did I get in exchange for temporarily putting on blinders and taking a few glancing blows? I followed the Rugby World Cup in Europe and watched the New Zealand All Blacks live, a dream I've had for the last 5 years. I shot every gun I've ever dreamed of firing since brainwashing myself with Commando. Bless the Slovak Republic and their paramilitaries. I filmed a television series pilot in Japan, a lifelong dream, and the most fun I've had in months, if not years. I met with my Japanese publisher, Seishisha, and had media interviews in Tokyo, where the 4-hour work week is now number one in several of the largest chains. I took a complete 10-day media fast and felt like I'd had a 2-year vacation from computers. I attended the Tokyo International Film Festival and hung out with one of my heroes, the producer of the Planet Earth television series. Once you realize that you can turn off the noise without the world ending, you're liberated in a way that few people ever know. Just remember, if you don't have attention, you don't have time. Did I have time to check email and voicemail? Sure, it might take 10 minutes. Did I have the attention to risk fishing for crises in those 10 minutes? Not at all. As tempting as it is to just check email for 1 minute, I didn't do it. I know from experience that any problem found in the inbox will linger in the brain for hours or days after you shut down the computer, rendering free time useless with preoccupation. It's the worst of states, where you experience neither relaxation nor productivity. Be focused on work or focused on something else, never in between. Time without attention is worthless, so value attention over time. Here are a few questions that can help you pop on the productivity blinders and put things in perspective, even when you're not traveling the world. Develop the habit of letting small bad things happen. If you don't, you'll never find time for the life-changing big things, whether important tasks or true peak experiences. If you do force the time, but puncture it with distractions, you won't have the attention to appreciate it. What is the one goal, if completed, that could change everything? What is the most urgent thing right now that you feel you must or should do? Can you let the urgent fail, even for a day, to get to the next milestone for your potential life-changing tasks? What's been on your to-do list the longest? Start it first thing in the morning and don't allow interruptions or lunch until you finish. Will bad things happen? Small problems will crop up, yes. A few people will complain and quickly get over it. But the bigger picture items you complete will let you see these for what they are. Minutia and repairable hiccups. Make this trade a habit. Let the small bad things happen and make the big good things happen. October 25th, 2007. Things I've loved and learned in 2008. 2008 was one of the most exciting years of my life. I did more deal making and met more people than in the last 5 years combined. This produced many surprise insights about business and human nature, especially as I uncovered dozens of my own false assumptions. Here are some of the things I learned and loved in 2008. Favorite reads of 2008: Zorba the Greek and Seneca, Letters from a Stoic. These are two of the most readable books of practical philosophies I've ever had the fortune to encounter. If you have to choose one, get Zorba, but Lucius Seneca will take you further. Both are fast reads of 2 to 3 evenings. Don't accept large or costly favors from strangers. This karmic debt will come back to haunt you. If you can't pass it up, immediately return to karmic neutrality with a gift of your choosing. Repay it before they set the terms for you. Exceptions: uber-successful mentors who are making introductions and not laboring on your behalf. You don't have to recoup losses the same way you lose them. I own a home in San Jose, but moved almost 12 months ago. It's been empty since, and I'm paying a large mortgage each month. The best part? I don't care. But this wasn't always the case. For many months, I felt demoralized as others pressured me to rent it, emphasizing how I was just flushing money away otherwise. Then I realized, you don't have to make money back the same way you lose it. If you lose $1,000 at the blackjack table, should you try and recoup it there? Of course not. I don't want to deal with renters, even with a property management company. The solution? Leave the house alone. Use it on occasion and just create incoming revenue elsewhere that would cover the cost of the mortgage through consulting, publishing, etc. One of the most universal causes of self-doubt and depression: trying to impress people you don't like. Stressing to impress is fine, but do it for the right people, those you want to emulate. Slow meals equal life. From Daniel Gilbert of Harvard to Martin Seligman of Princeton, the happiness, self-reported well-being researchers seem to agree on one thing. Mealtime with friends and loved ones is a direct predictor of well-being. Have at least 1 2- to 3-hour dinner and or drinks per week. Yes, 2 to 3 hours, with those who make you smile and feel good. I find the afterglow effect to be greatest and longest with groups of 5 or more. 2 times that are conducive to this: Thursday dinners or after-dinner drinks and Sunday brunches. Adversity doesn't build character, it reveals it. Related: money doesn't change you, it reveals who you are when you no longer have to be nice. It doesn't matter how many people don't get it, what matters is how many people do. If you have a strong, informed opinion, don't keep it to yourself. Try to help people and make the world a better place. If you strive to do anything remotely interesting, just expect a small percentage of the population to always find a way to take it personally. Fuck 'em. There are no statues erected to critics. Related: you're never as bad as they say you are. My agent used to send me every blog or media hit for the 4-hour work week. 8 weeks after publication, I asked him only to forward me positive mentions in major media or factual inaccuracies I needed to respond to. An important correlate: you're never as good as they say you are either. It's not helpful to get a big head or get depressed. The former makes you careless, and the latter makes you lethargic. I wanted to have untainted optimism but remain hungry. Speaking of hungry, eat a high-protein breakfast within 30 minutes of waking and go for a 10 to 20-minute walk outside afterward, ideally bouncing a handball or tennis ball. This one habit is better than a handful of Prozac in the morning. Suggested reading: The 3-Minute Slow Carb Breakfast, How to Peel Hard-Boiled Eggs Without Peeling, on 4hourblog.com. I dislike losing money about 50 times more than I like making it. Why 50 times? Logging time as an experiment, I concluded that I often spend at least 50 times more time to prevent a hypothetical unit of $100 from being lost versus earned. The hysterical part is that even after becoming aware of this bias, it's hard to prevent the latter response. Therefore, I manipulate the environmental causes of poor responses instead of depending on error-prone self-discipline. I should not invest in public stocks where I cannot influence outcomes. Once realizing that almost no one can predict risk tolerance and response to losses, I moved all of my investments into fixed income and cash-like instruments in July 2008 for this reason. setting aside 10% of pre-tax income for angel investments, where I can contribute significant UI design, PR, and corporate partnership help. Suggested reading: Rethinking Investing, Part 1, Rethinking Investing, Part 2, on 4hourblog.com. A good question to revisit whenever overwhelmed. Are you having a breakdown or a breakthrough? Rehearse poverty regularly. Restrict even moderate expenses for 1 to 2 weeks and give away 20% plus of minimally used clothing, so you can think big and take risks without fear. Seneca. A mindset of scarcity, which breeds jealousy and unethical behavior, is due to a disdain for those things easily obtained. Seneca. A small cup of black Kenyan AA coffee with cinnamon on top, no milk or sweeteners. It's usually better to keep old resolutions than to make new ones. To bring in a wonderful 2009, I'd like to quote an email I received from a mentor of more than a decade. While many are wringing their hands, I recall the 1970s when we were suffering from an oil shock, causing long lines at gas stations, rationing, and 55-mile-per-hour speed limits on federal highways. A recession, very little venture capital, $50 million per year into VC firms, and what President Jimmy Carter, wearing a sweater while addressing the nation on TV because he had turned down the heat in the White House, called a malaise. It was during those times that two kids without any real college education, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, started companies that did pretty well. Opportunities abound in bad times as well as good times. In fact, the opportunities are often greater when the conventional wisdom is that everything is going into the toilet. Well, we're nearing the end of another great year, and despite what we read about the outlook for 2009, we can look forward to a new year filled with opportunities as well as stimulating challenges. Happy New Year, everyone. How to travel the world with 10 pounds or less. Hauling a 5-piece Samsonite set around the planet is hell on earth. I watched a friend do this up and down dozens of subway and hotel staircases in Europe for 3 weeks, and while I laughed a lot, especially when he resorted to just dragging or throwing his bags downstairs, I'd like to save you the breakdown. Trip enjoyment is inversely proportionate to the amount of crap, read distractions, you bring with you. Practice in 30-plus countries has taught me that minimalist packing can be an art. I returned from Costa Rica last Wednesday and have since landed in Maui, where I'll stay for 1 week. What did I pack and why? See the companion video at 4hourblog.com. This video explains how and why I pack the items in the list that follows. Links for all items are also included. I practice what I'll label the BIT method of travel. Buy it there. If you pack for every possible contingency, better bring the hiking boots in case we go hiking, better bring an umbrella in case it rains, better bring dress shoes and slacks in case we go to a nice restaurant, etc., carrying a mule-worthy load is inevitable. I've learned to instead allocate $50 to $200 per trip to a settling fund, which I use to buy needed items once they're 100% needed. This includes cumbersome and hassle items like umbrellas and bottles of sunscreen that love to explode. Also, never buy if you can borrow. If you're going on a birdwatching trip in Costa Rica, you don't need to bring binoculars. Someone else will have them. Here's the Maui list. 1 featherweight marmot ion jacket, 3 ounces. 1 breathable Coolabah long sleeve shirt to prevent sunburn. This saved me in Panama. 1 pair of polyester pants. Polyester is light, wrinkle resistant, and dries quickly. Disco dancers and flash packers dig it. 1 Kensington laptop lock, also used to secure all bags to stationary objects. One single Under Armour sock used to store sunglasses. Two nylon tank tops. One large MSR quick dry microfiber towel absorbs up to 7 times its weight in water. One Ziploc bag containing toothbrush, travel toothpaste, and disposable razor. One FlyClear biometric travel card, flyclear.com. This company filed for Chapter 11 in June 2009, which cuts down my airport wait time about 95%. Two pairs of ex officio lightweight underwear. Their tagline is 17 countries, 6 weeks, and one pair of underwear. I think I'll opt for two, considering they weigh about as much as a handful of Kleenex. One other nice side effect of their weight, they're much more comfortable than normal cotton underwear. Two pairs of shorts, swimsuits. Two books. Lonely Planet Hawaii and The Entrepreneurial Imperative. The latter comes highly recommended. Check it out. One sleeping mask and earplugs. One pair of reef sandals. Best to get a pair with removable straps that go around the heel. One Canon PowerShot SD300 digital camera with extra 2 GB SD memory card. God, I love this camera more than words can describe. It is the best designed piece of electronics I have ever owned. I now use it not only for all of my photos and videos, but also as a replacement for my scanner. I'm considering testing the newer and cheaper SD1000. One coffee harvesting hat to prevent my pale skin from burning off. One Kiva keychain expandable duffel bag. One chapstick, one Maglite solitaire flashlight, and one roll of athletic tape. The last is a lifesaver. It's as useful as duct tape for repairing objects, but gentle enough to use on injuries, which I am fond of inflicting on myself. One Lewis and Clark Flex Lock for luggage, lockers, zippers, or whatever I need to lock down, shut together. Standard mini padlocks are often too cumbersome to thread through holes on lockers, etc. One Radio Shack kitchen timer, which I've been using to wake up for about 4 years. The problem with using a cell phone alarm to wake up is simple. The phone often needs to be on, and even if you use vibrate, people can call and wake you up before you want to wake up. The second benefit to using a kitchen timer is that you know exactly how much sleep you are, or aren't, getting. And you can experiment with things like caffeine power naps of different durations. But that's another post. July 11th, 2007. The Choice Minimal Lifestyle. 6 formulas for more output and less overwhelm. I was stressed out over dog cartoons. It was 9:47 p.m. at Barnes & Noble on a recent Saturday night, and I had 13 minutes to find a suitable exchange for the New Yorker dog cartoons, $22 of expensive paper. Best sellers, staff recommends, new arrivals or classics, I'd already been there 30 minutes. Beginning to feel overwhelmed with a ridiculous errand I'd expected to take 5 minutes, I stumbled across the psychology section. One tome jumped out at me as all too appropriate. The Paradox of Choice, Why More is Less. It wasn't the first time I'd seen or read Barry Schwartz's 2004 classic, but it seemed like a good time to revisit the principles. Among them, that the more options you consider, the more buyer's regret you'll have. The more options you encounter, the less fulfilling your ultimate outcome will be. This raises a difficult question. Is it better to have the best outcome but be less satisfied, or have an acceptable outcome and be satisfied? For example, would you rather deliberate for months and get the one of 20 houses that's the best investment, but second-guess yourself until you sell it 5 years later? Or would you rather get a house that is 80% of the investment potential of the former, still to be sold at a profit, but never second-guess it? Tough call. Schwartz also recommends making non-returnable purchases. I decided to keep the stupid pooch cartoons. Why? Because it's not just about being satisfied, it's about being practical. Income is renewable. But some other resources, like attention, are not. I've talked before about attention as a currency and how it determines the value of time. For example, is your weekend really free if you find a crisis in the inbox Saturday morning that you can't address until Monday morning? Even if the inbox scan lasts 30 seconds, the preoccupation and forward projection for the subsequent 48 hours effectively deletes that experience from your life. You had time, but you didn't have attention, so the time had no practical value. The choice minimal lifestyle becomes an attractive tool when we consider two truths. One, considering options costs attention that then can't be spent on action or present state awareness. Two, attention is necessary for not only productivity, but appreciation. Therefore, too many choices equals less or no productivity. Too many choices equals less or no appreciation. Too many choices equals sense of overwhelm. What to do? There are six basic rules or formulas that can be used. One, set rules for yourself so you can automate as much decision-making as possible. See the rules I use to outsource my email to Canada, included at the end of this section, as an example of this. Two, don't provoke deliberation before you can take action. One simple example, don't scan the inbox on Friday evening or over the weekend if you might encounter work problems that can't be addressed until Monday. Three, don't postpone decisions just to avoid uncomfortable conversations. If an acquaintance asks if you want to come to their house for dinner next week, and you know you won't, don't say, "I'm not sure, I'll let you know next week." Instead, use something soft but conclusive, like, "Next week, I'm pretty sure I have another commitment on Thursday, but thank you for the invite. Just so I don't leave you hanging, let's assume I can't make it, but can I let you know if that changes? Decision made, move on." 4. Learn to make non-fatal or reversible decisions as quickly as possible. Set time limits. I won't consider options for more than 20 minutes. Option limits. I'll consider no more than 3 options. Or finance thresholds. Example, if it costs less than $100, or the potential damage is less than $100, I'll let a virtual assistant make the judgment call. I wrote most of this post after landing at the monster that is ATL Airport in Atlanta. I could have considered half a dozen types of ground transportation in 15 minutes and saved 30% to 40%, but I grabbed a taxi instead. To use illustrative numbers, I didn't want to sacrifice 10 attention units of my remaining 50 of 100 total potential units, since those 10 units couldn't then be spent on this article. I had about 8 hours before bedtime due to time zone differences, plenty of time, but scarce usable attention after an all-nighter of fun and the cross-country flight. Fast decisions preserve usable attention for what matters. 5. Don't strive for variation, and thus increase option consideration when it's not needed. Routine enables innovation where it's most valuable. In working with athletes, for example, it's clear that those who maintain the lowest body fat percentage eat the same foods over and over with little variation. I've eaten the same slow-carb breakfast and lunch for nearly 2 years. For the exact breakfast, just search slow-carb on 4hourblog.com or both slow-carb and Ferris on Google. Putting variation only into meals that I focus on for enjoyment, dinner and all meals on Saturdays. This same routine variation distinction can be found in exercise versus recreation. For fat loss and muscle gain, even as much as 34 pounds in 4 weeks, I followed the same time minimal exercise protocol with occasional experiments since 1996. For recreation, however, where the focus is enjoyment and not efficacy, I tend to try something new each weekend, whether climbing at Mission Cliffs in San Francisco or mountain biking from tasting to tasting in Napa. Don't confuse what should be results-driven with routine, e.g. exercise, with something enjoyment-driven that benefits from variation. e.g. recreation. 6. Regret is past tense decision-making. Eliminate complaining to minimize regret. Condition yourself to notice complaints and stop making them,